Before I talk about what I'm going to talk about today, I want to say that I'm actually not going to be present for two mornings. I realize since these broadcasts have started, I don't actually think I've missed a single one. Of course, I could have forgotten, but I don't think so. But I have some responsibilities I have to take care of tomorrow and Thursday morning. So Wednesday and Thursday, I won't be speaking, and then I'll see you again on the following Monday. Those who watch on the recordings, none of this means anything, but I know some of you have coffee with me every morning. So tomorrow you'll have to either have a rerun or find new company. Okay. And Thursday. So yesterday where I ended, I recall ending, was just I wanted to talk about gratitude and about prosperity. And every morning before we start, we often try to think about a title about what the probability is that I'm going to talk about. And that the obvious titles for today were Gratitude, the Secret of Prosperity, Gratitude Brings Abundance, Be Grateful, just all the different words that you could obviously say, which are all true. I have a writer's pride, I suppose you would call it, that I like to avoid the obvious and say something that's a little less than obvious. So what we came to, and I presume it'll stay, is build with what you have, build on what you have. So, but it is a, we are talking about gratitude and abundance, but from a particular angle that I think is helpful. Now, this is all we're talking about living intuitively. We're not just talking about getting guidance and evaluating whether guidance is true or not. We're talking about living in a flow of higher awareness instead of allowing our lives to be dictated either in pure reaction to outer circumstances or just without regard to higher principles. Living intuitively means to live that your life matches your principles. One, it's very interesting. One of the and even that is a kind of intuition, in the sense that intuition is calm feeling that allows you to perceive a higher reality. So the just making sure on a very, not a brain dead intellectuality, but an integrated, intuitive and reasoned attitude, that your life reflects, that the decisions we make and the life that we live reflects what is truly important to us. In this context, I was remembering, some of you have heard me tell this before, but it's important in the moment, a young woman who was interested in our teachings. She's a very fine lady, and we had some karmic connection that was very sweet. She was interested in our teachings, but she had very strong ambitions for her own life in an external way. And she was afraid this teaching that talked about transcendence would separate her from the fulfillment of those desires. And I think it was an intuitive decision on her part. She was correct. She didn't quite belong to this path. She found another way. But she asked me if I was happy in the choice I made. And I said, happy is a very small word, really, in certain ways, and people define happiness however they want to define it. And it wasn't that I wasn't happy, it just didn't seem like the right question. So I said, what you should ask me is whether or not I've had to compromise my ideals to make a life that's worked for me. And the answer to that is no, I never have. And I think that in and of itself is almost a definition of living intuitively, which is the ability to know what your core values are and the ability to hold to them. Just as simple as that. I mean, I'll just even use the fact that I said earlier that tomorrow and the next day I have responsibilities that I need to follow through. They're responsibilities of friendship. It's not even about myself, but it's about friends who have been very supportive of me for decades, and they need my help. And so I made, and I did literally make an intuitive decision that friendship is a very high ideal with me, and that all of you, as my friends, would understand if I absented myself for 2 days, because friendship calls that I have to do that. And so one of the ways that I can help evaluate intuition in a very objective way is it consistent with ideals? Now, of course, another ideal of mine, which is not small, is that I've also made commitment to these broadcasts. And I've made a commitment to keep my word. And keeping my word is also an extremely high ideal with me. So here we are. How do we reason this out? We have to weigh one intuition against another intuition, one commitment against another, one ideal against another. But very interestingly, when Swami was talking about the priorities of Ananda, he put friendship nearly at the top of the list. And he actually even said that one of Ananda's purposes in the world is to show true friendship, what it really looks like. So I'm digressing a little from what I said was going to be my topic, which is why we sometimes change the topics, because at the end I realized that Divine Mother had a different plan than I had. So I'm talking about ideals at this point, which I hadn't really put it together until I started talking here about having clarity of your ideals. In fact, with Swamiji, you see, this is the difference between how to know and trust your inner guidance and how to live intuitively. Yesterday or the day before, I was commenting about how we made that the title, and the title is actually moving this discussion in a slightly different direction. One of the things that happened to me, which was really the transforming reality of my life when I met Swami Kriyananda, was that suddenly there was a clear idealistic line that I could follow. Prior to that, and of course, I met Swami when I was 22, so there wasn't a great deal of prior to that, but I was precocious in my desire to find meaning. So there was more before 22 than there would be for some people. But just a second, let me just think what I'm finding. Oh, yes. I knew that I had to find an idealistic way to live, that I absolutely could not just live an ordinary life. I had this picture in my mind. My ordinary life was I was married to some professional person. I never thought of myself as a career person. I always thought of myself as a mother. I would be a mother. I would have a station wagon, one of those station wagons that used to be popular in the 50s with the wood panel. There would always be a dog. There would be not that I ever even liked dogs, but there would always be a dog. There would be multiple children. There would be a husband who went off in the morning and came back in the evening, and I would be keeping a house. Now, on one level, that's a beautiful idea. That was my nightmare. That was my actual literal nightmare, is that I would end up just moving through the motions of life without really having a pole star. And so when I saw Swami and then everything that came after that, it was like there was a map for the journey. And living intuitively for me has always been to ask myself, you know, whatever choice is in front of me, how does it relate to what is for me the very clear line of what the highest value is in my life? It was a very interesting experience I had that way about 1980, around that time. No, it was a little before, but just at that point, 10 years into Ananda for me, or close to it. I was living in this little trailer. I lived in little trailers for those first 10 years. I always loved my little trailers. I never had any problem with the austerity of it or the primitiveness of it. That's actually austere. It never felt austere. It never felt primitive. It felt wonderful to me. I was actually having a discussion with a friend yesterday who talked about she used to go to another country in the wintertime and stay in this tiny little cottage that she had there that had no amenities. And it was a severe winter area. We talked about having to go get up in the middle of the night and go outside to the outhouse because there's no indoor plumbing. And we were both talking. I've never talked to anyone else about this that had the same experience. How magnificent it was. Because who would go out into the snow in the middle of the night except if you had to? And then if you're compelled by nature, as it were, to go out, suddenly you're in the middle of the night and it's snowing and just incredible. I had some of my most wonderful memories from that experience. And here I'm talking to someone who had the same. So I'm living in these little trailers without the slightest difficulty, really enjoying myself. And it crosses my mind suddenly. This is like after almost 10 years. This isn't good for me anymore. This is too contractive. I need a more expanded way to live. I need more beauty. I didn't need more comfort, but I needed more expansive beauty. It felt contractive to me all of a sudden. I mean, see, this is a very subtle thought, because simple living is not necessarily to live primitively or to deny yourself. Simple living is having what you need in order to live the life that you were born to live. And not having more, but having less than you need to fulfill your destiny is not necessarily more spiritual. And so Swamiji had a bigger house. He had more stuff in it. He had a generator because he worked day and night and he needed an electric typewriter. At that time, that was before computers. So he had to have, and he had to have a place where he could have many meetings and could have people come in and he needed a car that was reliable because he had to go back and forth to the city to teach classes, and he had parents. He had an obligation to his parents. He needed to be able to go back and forth to the Bay Area to see them. So his life was more, there was more stuff in it, and it was bigger than the life I was living. But when I really thought about it, he was just simply had what he needed to do the life that he needed to live. And my little primitive trailer, for the first decade, it was everything I needed for the life that I needed to live. But all of a sudden, just really almost all of a sudden, I looked at it. For the first time, I perceived that it wasn't very attractive and that it was cramped. There were just a lot of things about it that I had never noticed, never noticed. I had this trailer that was painted orange, bright orange and green on the inside. And on a certain level, I could tell it was kind of hideous, but I loved it. It was just wonderful to me. But anyway, so there we were. I was in a different one by then, and the one I was in was just tacky. And I had this really strong feeling that I needed to live in a more expansive way. I mean, it was a very strong feeling. Okay, so here's the intuition. I need to live in a more expansive way, but I don't have any money. I don't have access to money. I'm working. I was probably working for that time. I'm not sure, but probably I was still getting $50 a month in cash. For a time, Swami paid me $50 a month out of his wallet. I might have been on somebody else's payroll by then, but still, it was propane for heat and food. I mean, there was no third number. That's just what it was. And I knew I needed a change, but I said to myself, in order to get a change, because I had plenty of earning capacity. We've jokingly said that those of us who chose Ananda as our, quote, career, have not maximized our earning capacity in this life. I mean, I had all the talent or energy needed if I'd ever focused my attention toward earning money. So I could have gone out and earned money to get the money to build a house or buy a house or buy a nice trailer. I mean, anything could have been done. It was quite within my reach to do it. But in order to do that, I would have had to turn a great deal of my attention away from serving Ananda. And I just couldn't, because anything that took my attention away from serving Ananda for me was a total violation of my first principle. So I'm holding. Now, I want to say that because that's important, because I did not have a family. I mean, I was just completely alone. If I had children who needed a different environment, then it would have been a first principle for me to go out and earn the money for them. It might have been a first principle for me. At least it would have. And so what I'm saying is it's very personal. You can't just say, oh, this is what Asha did, therefore this is what I should do. I had someone talking to me about, basically they were trying to live according to the Nayaswami vow, even though they hadn't taken it. I said, it's not an appropriate vow for you. You know, you have many other responsibilities. You can't think the way I can think. But for me, it's the appropriate vow. But there's no hierarchy there. It's like it's better to fail at your own dharma than to succeed at someone else's. That's what we're talking about. Well, I guess I'm somewhat close to our topic. Build on what you are. Build on what you have. So I had to make a decision at that point, which I made. And I won't say it was effortless. I had to really concentrate on it because there were contradictory forces inside of me. But I finally said, Master, look, this is your problem. I can't make a decision just to get this for myself. And circumstances in my life totally turned in ways that I never expected to turn. 1 year later, I woke up in the morning. I was living in this beautiful white dome with blue carpets, and there were crystals in the windows that made rainbows on the roof. And I just woke up one morning. I mean, among other things, living at Ayodhya on the north side, there was never any sun in your house. All of a sudden, I was living somewhere else, and there was sun in the windows. I mean, everything had shifted. And I just woke up one morning, and I thought, oh, look. It was a true intuition, and it was a true intuitive response to do nothing about it. It wasn't that I repudiated it. It was just, Master, we have a contradiction here, so you're going to have to resolve it. I can't resolve it. Now, everybody's details are different. Sometimes it's a health crisis. Sometimes it's demands of other people. Sometimes it's a deep understanding in yourself that what suited you yesterday does not suit you today. And it's consistent with your ideals to make a change. In my case, that the first half was true, but not the second. So now I want to just go a little bit more directly to what I had intended to talk about, but I have talked about it, which is there's a syndrome that people fall into that think, I would be thus and so kind of person. I would be able to do a certain kind of work. I would have certain opportunities if only the conditions in my life were different. And this has often come in the context of someone coming to me for counseling, a single person who really wants to be married, a single person who perhaps wants to have a family. And, you know, it's a little tricky. They're committed to Ananda. It's harder because you want someone who shares your values and it's a fairly small pond. For whatever reason, even if that's not the circumstance, you know, marriage and relationships are like the generational nightmare of a couple of generations here. It's just not simple. We're not a simple culture. A friend of mine, an American friend, actually, well, he's an acquaintance. He was the friend of my Indian friends. Okay, let me tell you the whole story. SRF. Devotee, very devoted to master, American man, simply could not find a wife. He just couldn't end up with the right person. So he was in India. He was actually talking to Hare Krishna Ghosh, who at that time was, you know, still in the body. And he was lamenting. Hare Krishna Ghosh was the heir to the Four Garpar Road house. He's master's nephew. Yes, master's nephew directly. He was elderly at this time. This American man was lamenting his lack of a wife. And Hare Krishna says, but that's absurd. Why don't we just arrange a marriage for you? And so Hare Krishna did. He arranged for this man to meet a Bengali woman. I mean, he set up a marriage with a Bengali woman, lovely Bengali woman. I met them in Southern California. And they were having a very nice life. So it was just this whole thing, like, well, that's not a problem. We have a solution for that. And Hare Krishna became a sponsor and took him through it. Very unusual, but it worked. Most of the time, people come to me and they don't know what to do. So this has been the pattern that has worked for me. Who do you think you would be if you were married and if you had children? What do you think you would be able to do if you were married and had children that you're not able to do as a single person? And I've asked them to really be very serious about this and make a very long list. You know, what would be possible as a married person with a family? You know, the things that you would do, and then you can take those another step, which is like, you know, what does that represent to you? What is the consciousness that you're trying to express? I mean, there's two levels. One is the actual, what would you do? And the other is, what is the vibration of consciousness that you think that's going to give you? Then look at it and ask yourself, how many of those realities are accessible to me right now. I just have in my mind that I can't do it unless circumstances change. Okay, this is where I'm talking about build on what you have. I mean, I'm more than willing to say, you know, it might be a very deep, necessary reality for you to have a partner and have a family, but sitting there conscious of what you don't have and feeling unable to express yourself because of what you don't have is not an attitude that's going to bring happiness. It's not an attitude that's going to create magnetism. It's not an attitude that's going to attract to you even a very good partner, because you're going to be sitting there, you know, just sitting there unfulfilled, frozen, waiting for your life to start. That's not very magnetic or attractive. And it's an awful burden to put on whoever you meet, and an awful burden to put on your children if you have them, that you are the source of my happiness. It's you see how difficult that is? Now, let's just even talk about, I don't have the opportunity to serve. I have a lot that I can give, and I don't have any opportunity to give it. You know, I understand these teachings, and I have a lot that I can share. I really so respect that there were a couple of friends of mine who both took the same approach. Both of them found themselves with an insufficient way to share, and both of them went out and became hospital chaplains. It was just like, I mean, it was unrelated incidences where these, both of these men took that route. But at the time I thought, that was a brilliant idea. You know, it's like, there are a lot of people, there's a lot of places you can serve. It's what do I want to be able to do? I want to be able to give the light that I have in me to others. So who needs it? Who needs me? And you might think, well, I want a position within Ananda, I want a position within the Sangha, I want to be able to be recognized in this way. Well, maybe yes, maybe no, but write it down. What do I think would happen if these circumstances were different? And is there any other way to get there? When this pandemic started, you know, which is now such a long time ago, and I found myself confined to quarters pretty much, and fortunately I was able to put up all this recording and broadcasting equipment, which I already had, and, you know, dedicate myself this way. And I thought I might do some writing or something, but there was too much mental agitation that just didn't work out. But I had too much time and too much energy. And then one of my friends started sewing face masks. And somehow we got into a discussion about sewing cloth face masks. This was at the very beginning of this, when everything was just a little chaotic. And I thought, I can sew. And in fact, as it happened, because of my work with the school for costumes, I had boxes and boxes of fabric that, everybody who's a seamstress, which are fewer and fewer of us, we understand what the only thing I can call is fabric greed, that we all have it. We all have boxes and boxes of fabric. So I would end up with these pieces, and there was just no chance that I would ever give it up. I would just put it in boxes. So I had boxes and boxes of fabric that was just exactly what was needed to sew these masks. I became like a crazed person just sewing masks. I have officially retired. I put out a holiday collection of masks, which is more attractive because I bought the fabric. And then I announced that I was retiring with the right to change my mind. But I've made 1,000 masks, and perhaps more, and fortunately just given them all away. At the beginning, I thought I was saving the lives of all my brothers and sisters, so I was really crazed, you know, just get masks in the hands of everyone. Now, of course, people can have them. It's just a question of matching your outfit, you know. But the point was, and this was the point, I need to serve. And so many of the ways that I would have filled my time, including being in the physical presence of a lot of you guys all over the world, it just wasn't open to me. So what do I need? What do I think would happen to me if I was out, you know, traveling? Well, I would feel that I was using my time in some way that would increase the light in the world. So I can't do that. So what do I have? Oh, I have a sewing machine and boxes of fabric. And people need to breathe through these cloth masks. But if I couldn't have sewn masks, I would have baked bread, or I would have made cookies, or I would have recorded audiobooks, or I would have called people on the telephone. I mean, how can I serve? Because, and it works mathematically, metaphysically is actually the right word. Energy attracts energy. In the Bible, it's put in such a way that it's just awful. To those who have, more will be given. To those who have not, even the little they have will be taken away from them. It's just an awful statement. You kind of just want to, when you come to it in the Bible, you want to take small scissors and just cut it out. I mean, how can God be so unkind? But he wasn't talking about God's punishment. He was talking about the metaphysical laws of prosperity. And think about it. It's like when you're dynamically giving, everybody wants to be with you. Everybody wants your help. And you become a recognizable person who has something to contribute. And when someone has something to contribute, they're always invited to contribute more. Isn't that the way it works? Or, you know, I'm not going to promise you great notoriety and praise from the world if you start baking cookies, but you'll be able to be who you're hoping to be. And everybody has something. Everybody has something. If you're physically unwell and you have to work only with vibrations, you know, people I know who have been physically limited in what they can do, they get very deeply into prayer. And often they start helping, you know, manifest prayer because it's something that a person can do even from a sick bed. And that's a small example. If you're injured and hurt in any way, or just confined, having to take care of a small baby, you know, or whatever it might be that happens to you, if you squander the opportunities that are given to you, I mean, just think of it in human terms. The metaphysics are obvious. If you ask for someone's help and they think the job is not important or glamorous enough to really carry out effectively, how inclined would you be to give them new opportunities? But when somebody takes even the smallest thing and does it as well as it can be done, as beautifully as it can be done, then the next time you need something, you obviously ask. If you give someone a gift, and an opportunity is a gift, and they say, I don't like this gift, I want another one, and they throw it on the floor or leave it out in the rain and let it get ruined, how inclined are you to give them something else? That's the way the metaphysics is of the world. Build on what you have. Start with whatever is available to you now and what you imagine you think you have to have before you can start. Reduce that thought down to what consciousness am I trying to express and where can I find a place to express it now? And, you know, be creative in our thinking about this. Don't just go along conventional lines. And you'll activate a flow of grace, and that flow of grace brings with it opportunity. Opportunity brings the opportunity to grow and to get closer to God, which is our first ideal. God bless you.